This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn.
Now, something that we do like to do from time to time, and not as often as I'd like, but maybe more often than he'd like, is invite Richard Gray into the studio and talk about movies from a thematic point of view. And that is, we choose movies about something, and you know, we talk about the best ones, we talk about the famous ones, the not so famous that you might want to catch up with, the worst ones, and we want to hear from you about it as well. And this morning, as I welcome Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Rod.
Why did you choose movies about journos or reporters?
Well, part of it was because the time you asked me to come on the show, I'd just seen Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And think about the initials of that title for a moment, which is a new movie with Tina Fey and Martin Freeman about embedded journalists in Afghanistan in 2001, I think, through 2006, thereabouts. And it sort of struck me that a lot of journalistic films do depict a particular side of journalism. Yes. It's glamorous. And then you mentioned that Spotlight had just come out on DVD, which won the Best Picture Oscar last year.
Yes.
So I kind of started thinking again about what are some of the great films featuring journalists over the last century or so.
Indeed. And, you know, it's very rare that we can start, and I don't usually start with a song, but I do want to play this because this is sung by two journalists or people playing journalists in a movie that you don't often think about when you think about great movies about journalists.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
I don't.
Have flashy flunkies everywhere?
I don't.
From High Society, so Frank Sinatra and Celeste Holm, I should have pointed out they're going through the wedding presents at that point, which is why I think Celeste Holm puts her head into a vase or something for that weird bit, but boy, that was a long 2 minutes. But yes, so they were working for Spy magazine.
That's right.
And went out to cover the wedding of Grace Kelly and Bing Crosby. And I mentioned it only because I loved the actual Spy magazine, which came about in the 1980s, took its name from the Spy magazine in High Society. They were two journalists. They were reporters.
That's the thing. When you started going through this list of films about journalists, it's not just the ones we kind of mentioned, like Spotlight, where they're just investigating a topic. Yeah. There's just journalists in all sorts of films that have nothing to do with investigating. They just happen to be journalists as a profession.
Incidentally, journalists.
Yeah.
For example, give me an example.
Well, I think, you know, one of the ones that I jotted down at the last minute, and I'm surprised it didn't occur to me, which is the original superhero journalist, which is Superman.
Yeah.
You know, you often forget the fact that Clark Kent has chosen journalism as his sort of day job. When he's
always
not out.
First on the scene of any major crime.
Best investigative reporter on the planet.
That's right. Well, on the Daily Planet.
On the Daily Planet.
And not to mention Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen and Perry White
as the whole
well.
Thing. And this was like, you know, when the comic was created in the late 30s, there was obviously seen to be this kind of truth and justice about the journalistic profession as well. And I think that sort of integrity and gumption of journos is kind of permeated all these films as you go through.
But beyond just Superman and Clark Kent being the reporter, Spider-Man, he's a photojournalist.
Exactly.
And then Batman, Vicki Vale, I think she is a journalist who comes to visit Batman in the first of those rebootings back in 1989.
Back in the Tim Burton ones. Yeah, absolutely. And you've usually got a journo of some kind in those films.
Yes,
and
that's right.
Because often it's the person who's kind of trying to figure out the secret identity of someone, you know, of whatever the superhero is.
Very interesting. If you've got any thoughts on this, we'll take some calls in just a moment. Peter in Richmond says the journalist Donald Woods, I think, was played by Kevin Klein in that movie Biko. Cry Freedom.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, with Denzel Washington and Steve
Biko. I completely forgot about that,
but
I loved that movie when it came out.
Yeah.
And it was a really powerful film at the time. And I think that's a great thing about these films, is you can often make these pointed commentaries about things that are happening in the media or things that are happening elsewhere, but you can do it through the somewhat removed lens of a journalist as well.
The Killing Fields was another one.
That was one of the first ones I actually thought of that. And it's actually, and that was, and certainly when The Killing Fields came out, we were slightly closer to it being a topical issue.
That's right.
But removed enough to be a very hard-hitting film, even though it's... And that's the thing. Some of these films do have the benefit of hindsight.
Yes.
And the one that we talked about recently, even Spotlight,
yes,
as recent as that feels, we're still dealing with stuff that was 10 years old by the time it came out.
When people talk about movies about journalists, the first thing really they bring up is All the President's Men.
Mm.
Is that the best one? I certainly think it is, but I'm curious as to your idea. Your
I think thoughts. It's up there because I think with All the President's Men, you have this whole history of the intrepid, plucky Washington reporter behind it. And they've sort of been set up now, certainly since the 70s, as the archetype for every... journalist film that's come since, and the real life Woodward Bernstein. Woodstein.
Well, that's what they were nicknamed Woodstein.
Yeah, I know. That's I think that's why I always conflate them.
Yeah.
But the real, you know, you obviously get not only all the reporting that they did during that, they got a book that came out of it, and so you get this real depth of knowledge that came out of their reporting. And that's translated in the film. And it was a comment, an offhanded comment you made to me before we started recording, that it's one of those rare
films.
We're
live, by the way.
Sorry?
We're live.
We're live now.
Yes,
I'm not recording.
We're live on the radio right now. It's frightening.
Well, it's been recorded somewhere, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure.
Before we started talking on air, at least, the idea that these are, you know, the grunt work of journalism, that you actually get to see that. And I think that's why people... like it. You got these two major Hollywood stars, but basically playing journalistic grunts.
Yeah. And the same with Spotlight, which there's so many similarities between those two films. But yes, you see them knocking on doors. You see them following up leads. Some leads go nowhere. And going through all the names on the list of the committee to re-elect the president and all that sort of stuff. And in Spotlight, cross-referencing the who was a priest where and did they go on holiday or would they go...
And the crushing defeats aren't like, you know... a building blowing up or something.
Yes.
The crushing defeats are, you know, we can't get access to this file or we can't get access to this document, but you still feel it somehow, you know.
It's an interesting little cross between All the President's Men, which is the classic journalist film, which is all about journalism. It's not really about Nixon resigning or doing something wrong. And then the movie Chances Are, which has Ryan O'Neill working at the Washington Post.
Yes.
And... there's someone playing the role of Ben Bradley, who was played by Jason Robards, and he won an Oscar for it in All the President's Men. And the person playing Ben Bradley in Chances Are, and I can't remember who it is, he's really not playing Ben Bradley. He's playing Jason Robards playing Ben Bradley. You know, he's playing now what we think Ben Bradley was like. And then John Slattery is playing Ben Bradley Jr. in Spotlight. It's a remarkable sort of little link there.
Yeah, and I think that's because... the whole idea of print, you know, that adage about printing the legend is never more true than when you talk about, you know, sort of the history of journalists on film, that the idea of what a journalist does has become bigger than what the grunt work of what a journalist actually does is.
A couple of suggestions. The Quiet American, an incredibly underrated movie, says Richard. Good night and good luck, says John L. Peter from Belmont mentions... well, one of the ones that I thought of, Roman Holiday.
Oh, yeah,
now,
of course.
Now, there's Gregory Peck in Rome as the American News Service whatever reporter in Rome meeting the princess, Audrey Hepburn. And he doesn't follow the story at the end, you know? He's got the story of his career and he doesn't do it.
That's because he's got integrity, right?
I don't know. In the end, he does, but maybe because he's put his hand in the mouth of truth. I don't know.
That's true. I can't remember anything other than Audrey Hepburn
on a Vespa.
I mean, what else is there to remember about that film?
Wow, it's a very interesting movie, I got to say.
No, it is a good film.
Absence of Malice.
Yeah, that one came up a few times. That was quite an early one, wasn't it?
1981.
Oh, no, that was the 81 one. I'm getting mixed up with the other one. Yeah, Absence of Malice is
Sally
an interesting
Field
one.
And Paul Newman.
Yeah, and again, the 80s was a period where you had, I think there was kind of the first revival of like big journalistic film. As you said, you had Killing Fields and things like that coming out there. But Absence of Malice. I've kind of actually forgotten some of the details of that.
Well,
one.
I mean, yeah. I think that the story, or Sally Field was a journalist, and they wrote these articles about Paul Newman, which were totally wrong, and they completely and utterly besmirched the bloke's character.
Mm.
And he didn't like it, and it didn't turn out very well from him, as I recall. It's a long time since I've seen the film.
Mm.
Zodiac is another film that you wanted to talk about.
Zodiac,
and
was,
Jack mentions that one. Yeah,
yeah. Zodiac is a really interesting approach because it was a case where we don't actually have an answer to the Zodiac. I mean, there was a lot of evidence to suggest who it might have been, and David Fincher, who had done big serial killer type films before with Seven and what have you. Constructed this film around the investigation in this, again, very, kind of removed, detached sort of way. And I think that's a really interesting one because it's all about the process, because you don't get a nice bow tied on it at the end.
What a shame. I really want to know who the Zodiac Killer is.
Well, they kind of very heavily lean towards telling you who it was.
Yeah, but can we believe that? Because in real life, there's quite a few potential suspects coming forward.
I'm looking at you, Rod.
Thanks. And that was Ted Cruz, apparently. Jack and someone else both mentioned The Soloist. Now, I didn't see The Soloist.
I don't think I've seen The Soloist either.
Is that about the bloke who finds the musician?
That's
like,
the one with
the
Robert
street?
Downey Jr.,
yeah,
is it?
And, yeah. I must check that. Almost Famous.
Almost Famous is a great one because it's sort of a autobiography of Cameron Crowe, but it's not... it's not actually Cameron Crowe, even though he's directed the film and he's written it. This kid in the film is actually playing a version of him.
Yes.
Because Cameron Crowe in real life, and I doubt this would ever happen now, outside of Instagram, is a teenager suddenly gets this massive responsibility of touring around with the band and being the reporter for Rolling Stone.
But you also see Philip Seymour Hoffman playing Lester Bangs, one of the great rock journos. And he's wonderful in that role, in a kind of a... not really a cameo, it's a bit bigger than that. But yes, where he, don't get too close to the band, they'll buy you things, they'll give you drugs or whatever, they'll be your friend, don't do it. It's fantastically good advice.
And it's, if you've ever read any of Lester Bangs' stuff, he's written some great long-form journalism on rock, and it's amazing. But I think the actual immediacy of that, and there's the other one you mentioned before, End of the Tour, kind of has some sort of parallels there as well. But I've always really liked Almost Famous because it's a great film about a journalist, but it's also a coming of age film, and you don't often get that combination.
No, indeed. They're usually hard bitten, cynical, not totally and utterly, in a situation where they're going to be influenced by what happened.
And this is someone actually finding the joy of journalism and actually finding the fine line, as you said, to walk between. So plus the music's fantastic.
All right. There was The Poor Reporter, who was killed in Monty Python's Holy Grail.
That's true.
Can't remember that. Captain Underpants did. Thank you. By the way, our texter who says Almost Famous, with the most unlikable bunch of characters in a movie. Now, that's an interesting thing that I hadn't really thought of, but they're not really all that nice, are they?
No. And I think that's kind of half the point of that film, too, that he is sort of swept up by the whole majesty of rock and the Ministry of Roll.
Thank you very much.
Spinal Tap, for those of you who don't know the reference. He is all swept up by that, but and that's the whole Lester Bangs thing, don't get caught up in it. But they're not nice people at all.
Broadcast News.
Yes. Which has that terrific moment with Holly Hunter, who only comes into a desk early in the morning so she can cry.
Yeah, she has to cry on cue in the morning. Yeah. She has to cry every day, otherwise she won't make it. I mean, I saw that movie, and this is before video really and all that. I saw that movie 10 times. I went back over and over and over and over again to see that at the movies because I love that movie so much.
There's something about that Brooks kind of perfect, combination. It's a tight script. I mean, you start with something that's very, very...
It's interesting you say that because I've got the actual script.
Yeah.
And it goes for like twice as long as the movie that you get. And there's all these lines in the film where you think, what does that mean? And in fact, it relates back to a part that's been cut out, an entire character who was cut out.
Well, they've tightened it in the edit.
It's magnificent. Today I find myself saying lines from that movie. It's just so quotable.
Well, I think that's the distinction between some comedies then and comedies now. And I don't mean to kind of disparage, because there's some terrific comedies still coming out, but there was a self-editing process. As you said, getting down from like a four-hour comedy script. Yeah. Now it would be released as the raw and uncut edition on DVD, and all the ad-libs and everything would go back in. Here, there's a recognition, as good as the material is, if it doesn't serve the strength of that story, it gets jettisoned.
Let's start with a couple of calls. John, good morning.
Good morning.
You want to talk about a couple of classics?
Oh, yeah, well, three came to mind while I'm driving. Yep. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yeah, very much
so. A large chunk of that. Remember the last line, when the truth becomes...
Yeah, it's all about when the truth outstrips the legend, print the legend.
Print the legend, yeah. And, of course, the Fletch movies with Chevy Chase.
I'm glad you mentioned that. He's hilarious in those.
And The Front Page, which has got to be the best, with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Really?
That's got to be one of the greats of journalism.
Yeah, okay. I love the others, and I'll talk about the Front Page with Richard. John, thanks very much for the suggestions.
Okay,
thank
you.
1-300-800-222. Now, The Front Page is interesting because it's been done about three or four times.
At least.
And then done maybe better with His Girl Friday.
I dare say, yeah.
With Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell. And then Christopher Reeve, they did the TV version called Switching Channels, which which wasn't all that great.
No, but yeah, look, His Girl Friday is definitely my favorite of those, but that's probably a bias towards Cary Grant as well. But there, it's kind of one of those things where it is about journalists, but it's kind of, you know, a rom-com by any other name, but he's using his journalistic powers to stop a wedding.
To stop an execution.
Stop an execution, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, stop a wedding was kind of in High Society.
So High Society, so I'm getting the two mixed up, aren't I?
Yes, and I often get His Girl Friday and High Society.
Sorry, that's
up.
The two I was getting mixed up.
But with, it's interesting that, you know, it's with His Girl Friday that, it's an execution. They're trying to stop the execution of possibly an innocent man.
Mm.
And that's a pretty heavy subject for a rom-com, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's where my confusion came in there, because it is a rather light film in that sense, but I think certainly in 1940 when His Girl Friday came out,
40, 41,
like that, you how do you deal with a subject that heavy, particularly in the US, without giving it a little bit of comedy? You know, now you could treat it as it would probably be a less fun film if it was made today. I don't think you could make a comedy about an execution, a rom-com about an execution today.
Owen, g'day, Owen.
Hey, there's this three that come to mind for me.
Right.
I'll list them in the order of the ones that are most to do with journalism.
Right.
First of all, Tim Burton's Batman.
Yep.
Which is obviously not massively to do with journalism, but without the
in a secondary storyline. Yeah,
without the journalism in there, it wouldn't have worked. Superman, the Christopher Reeve Superman one is just...
Yes.
Very well, the whole set is to journalism, but that first one was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But the main one, Citizen Kane, I think is one of the
very
best movies about journalism, and I think it's one of the best classic films of all time.
Well, that's a big statement, Owen.
I've always liked the acting in it. I've always
needs a car chase, Owen. Needs a car chase.
Well, okay, maybe, but I do like the what the film is about and how it was made.
Good point. Very good point. Rosebud. Owen, thank you very much. I'll get Richard to comment on this. Okay, so Citizen Kane is about journalism, of course. That, you know, you provide the prose poems, I'll provide the war. Wonderful stuff. But it's
I think it would be fun to write a newspaper.
Yeah. But the movie opens with someone trying to find out about his life story. It's a journalist's walk through his life.
I tend to go, there's something that you kind of, the caller, was it Joseph? Owen, sorry, said there, which is admiring the story behind the film almost as much as the film itself. And Citizen Kane's one of those films that always like tops list, and so it's sort of an easy call to say it's one of the greatest films about journalism, but it is, given who it was attacking at the time,
the most powerful It would be like making a movie about Murdoch.
Murdoch now,
today.
Yeah. Although you could probably, I mean, I think it would be easier, I think, today to make a film about Murdoch because you have, you know, kind of the weight of the world's, you know, kind of alternative media behind you. But
sure.
Then that film was the alternative media. It was, you know, as subversive a Hollywood film as you could possibly find.
There was a movie, as I recall, about Murdoch, Tomorrow Never Dies.
That's right. The Bond movie
with Elliot Carver was the character, and he would, yeah, I don't know how well, they did. It was one of the most ridiculous Bond films.
Technically, that is a journalistic film.
Yeah, of course.
It's about writing tomorrow's news headlines, creating tomorrow's news headlines tonight.
Interesting. All right. Thanks very much, Owen. Philip, good morning.
Good morning. There's The Year of Living Dangerously with Mel Gibson and Sigourney Weaver.
Very much so.
Very much so. And probably my favourite, which, and the name slips me, but I'm sure you guys will actually, I've actually probably watched it 10 times because I reckon it typifies photojournalism and two journalists. Nick Nolte. And Gene Hackman, and I forget the lady lead, but it was in Nicaragua, which covered the Contras, and it starts.
Was it Salvador?
No, it was. It started with a black and white frame of elephants walking through the thing, and Nolte was snapping the camera, and then the soldiers just raised themselves out of the grass, and it was very true to the point of. Of actually, you know, his use of the camera and the way he got that down perfect, and then Gene Hackman actually got shot trying to, you know, about halfway or three quarters away through the movie trying to get
knows it.
I think the movie you're thinking of is called Under Fire.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Under Fire.
Fantastic. I love that. I mean, I absolutely loved it. I mean, it was tremendous. Cause,
yeah, so that came out in 83, about the Nicaraguan regime.
Yeah, that's probably why I can't remember.
Fair enough, indeed. All right, Philip, thanks, mate.
Thank you.
All right. That's an example also of journalists under fire in difficult, dangerous positions, in wars, and, boy, Mel Gibson was fantastic in Year of Living Dangerously. And the character he played, in fact, was based on the brother of the bloke who wrote the book, Chris Koch.
Yeah.
And he was my first boss at the ABC, Philip Koch.
There you go.
And Mel came down, this is long before I joined the ABC, to talk to Philip Koch about what it was like. And he kind of fell off the plane because he had a few drinks on the way down, apparently, from Sydney to Canberra. But anyway.
Wow. I mean, yeah, you're right. The whole film about journalists under fire is a whole subgenre unto itself.
Yes, very much so. And in fact, we've got kind of, when we're looking at journos, there's usually, you know, investigative journalists who won't be stopped. They've got to tell the story. Kill the Messenger recently with Jeremy Renner is an example of that. Very different because it doesn't end really happily, I hate to say. And then there's kind of the incidental ones. Do you think they glamorise journalism? It's a lot of hard work, a lot of boring work.
I think the majority of them do, and they almost glorify it. But then you've also got this subgenre of journalistic films which almost depicts the other side, which is the ambulance-chasing side of it. There was recently things like Nightcrawler, which sort of depicts that whole...
Film.
Which is an amazing movie, and with Jake Gyllenhaal, of course... and it's about the sort of ambulance chasing nature of getting footage from accidents, and ultimately in that film, he's not just chasing the accidents; he's in fact setting them up. And there is that whole culturally, there's been this turn against not journalists but the media generally thinking that it's muckraking. It's
can't trust them.
You can't trust them. You can't trust headlines because pulpy sort of reporting, you do get that kind of turnaround. And that's always been the case. There's always been a sort of an element of there's been pulps and there's been, newspapers of record. And some of that's dealt with, I think, a little bit in with the rise of the internet, certainly in a documentary, Page One, inside the New York Times, where they kind of compare hyperlinked sort of journalism versus, you know, original reporting.
I wasn't crazy about that.
No, because it's very biased.
Yeah. but we'll come back to a couple more like that. Josh, good morning.
How's it going?
Going well. You've got a one that I thought of, and we should all think about this one. What is it, Josh?
Mate, it's one of the greatest Australian movies of all time, Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, of course. Not to mention one of the other great Australian films, Crocodile Dundee 2.
That's correct.
Yes, tell me more. Tell me more about the journalism side of Crocodile Dundee.
Well, you know, it's the female journalist that goes to the Australian outback to try and find this, you know, this man that everyone's talking about and experience the greater Australian sort of
outback
area. Yeah. And, yeah, you know, it sort of just goes from there, doesn't it?
That is a very good suggestion, Josh. Thank you very much for that. Yes, Linda Kozlowski.
Of course. It is the classic. I mean, it's both the classic sort of journalism kind of archetype, but also that adventure story
meeting
thing.
Meeting of two worlds.
It's the plucky reporter going out to investigate the wild man. You know,
and taming him.
And taming him and bringing him back to civilization.
But who's the real civilized one?
Exactly.
Renee, good morning.
Hello. I thought he was going to steal my thunder because I was thinking of Newsfront.
Very much so. And reporting before we had, you know, TV reporting.
Yeah, and I can hardly remember anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
All I can remember is the Maitland floods.
Yes, that's the part I remember too, and the Red X trials.
And was, you know, Jimmy from the Argonauts, the actor, was he in it?
John Hewitt.
John Hewitt.
Yes,
that's right. He was Jimmy in the Argonauts.
Oh,
he was in it, I think.
Yes, he certainly was. He played Charlie.
Right.
Yeah, he was Chris Hayward's. He was one of the main cameramen, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I remember being impressed, but I can hardly remember any details.
The
role, it's two cliches.
Yes.
Coming out of the courtroom and people being, you know.
Oh, you're surrounded by journos.
And the other scene is the front newspaper going twirl, 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 and then the headlines in your face.
Yes, and then when you read the article's got nothing to do with the headline, you know?
Yeah.
They spend all that money on the movie and they don't bother to print a proper paper.
And also, just recently, Amy Winehouse, you know, the role of the press in her.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Good point. Renee, thank you very much. We'll tell you more about Newsfront because Jude, who's one of our regular calls, you say you're in it, Jude.
Yeah, but I got cut to the floor,
I know,
as all us Steelers did.
It
was written by Bob Ellis and Anne Brooksbank, my dearly departed young Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the privilege of working with some of the many deceased who have just been mentioned. But I was actually playing Brian Brown's wife.
Wow. And did you get any scene in the final product, Jim?
Oh, no, actually, I was playing Billy Hunter's wife.
Bill Hunter's wife.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was playing Brian Brown. Oh,
well, one of the two, it's a long time ago.
And there was Wendy Hunter. Wendy
Hughes.
Darling Wendy, who went
she's gone
away
to God as well.
And I was born in floods, so it was sort of very relevant to me. But we both got cut to the floor.
What
because the women stole the scene where there was a big scene where all the men and women were at somebody's wake.
Okay. Yes.
And Bunny Brooke and me and a few other brilliant actrines were, and we stole the scene. And Bert Dealing, who cut it, who edited it, said, "Sorry, darling, you're on the floor. All the best stuff was the women."
He said it was
so fellow-centric.
Yes.
And all the women got cut to the floor. "Sorry, darling, you were brilliant and so were they, but..."
That's showbiz, I'm afraid, Jude, but thank you very much for that. Indeed, 1-300-800-222, or you can text us 0467-922-702 if you'd like to tell us your favourite movie or a movie you remember about reporters, journalists, anything like that. Let's go with Hamish. G'day, Hamish.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, mate. What do you want to talk about?
Look, you might be able to help me with the name of a film. I saw it years and years ago, and it's about a journalist who wanted to do a story on death row. So they put him in to jail, and then one night they swap him and actually put him on death row.
Wow.
And it goes right up to they put him in the chair and they pull the handle, and then the the film ends with him saying, "Now go away, write your story now."
Wow.
And look, I saw it 30 years ago in black and white, late one night. I've always wondered what the name of the film was.
Because you've got me intrigued now. I don't know this, but thanks for spoiling the ending. But
sorry.
That's all right. Let's hope it turns up at some point. Do you remember anyone who might have been in it?
Nah, look, I used to work nights, so I used to come home and watch a bit of TV. And look, this thing, it was a chilling film, yeah.
Okay, so you reckon maybe made in the 40s or 50s?
Oh, could be, yeah. Well, okay. Don't know, when did they sort of the electric chair? And it was on a black and white TV, so it
could have been colour. Good point. Hamish, thank you very much. Maybe someone can tell us. Richard, does that ring a bell?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Sounds
fascinating. We need some plucky reporters to go out. We need our own spotlight team to go out and find these films.
All right. 1-300-800-222. There's our text machine is playing up. So 0467-922-702. Hopefully those texts will come in. Elaine, good morning.
Hi, Rod and Richard. A couple for you. Velvet Goldmine with Christian Bale investigating the death of a glam rocker.
Did you like the movie, Elaine?
Oh, I loved it, and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers and his vocals.
Yes.
Really good. And what about, have you mentioned Nightcrawler?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal. Yes.
That's a sensational movie, isn't it?
Yes, very good.
And you know what I've noticed ever since I saw that movie, Elaine, is when you watch the news on the TV, you'll see the little name of someone on the top corner of that footage of a fire or something, and you know that they've sold it to the channel.
Yes.
Elaine, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Enemy at the Gate. Anchorman. A couple of Australian ones. Balibo, yes, about the deaths of the five Australian journalists. Ground Zero. Remember that with Colin Friels about the British nuclear tests?
Oh, yes.
Out in the desert.
And while we're on nuclear, the China Syndrome.
Very much so.
Mm.
In fact, there was another movie that reminded me of the China Syndrome, which I will think of in a moment. Oh, well, Up Close and Personal as well. Not a lot like it, but woman journalist, but Michelle Pfeiffer trying to make her way in the biz. Bruce Almighty. Oh, God, that was terrible. La Dolce Vita, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, State of Play, Salvador, Syriana, Killing Fields. Thanks, Peter. MG liked Up Close and Personal. Steve in Newcastle says, William Holden playing a reporter in Love is a Many Splendid Thing. But I remember Bill Holden playing the reporter in Born Yesterday.
Yes.
Where he educates, what's the name, Judy Holliday.
Of course he does.
In Washington, D.C. That's a great movie. Come on. All right. Patrick, good morning.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. Oh, I've got two for you. One is an Australian film, and it's more a doco about the photojournalist. It's called One Crowded Hour, and it's about the late great
hero
of mine, Neil Davis. Yeah, where he films his own
death.
Yeah, that's just tragic. But he was a great man. It was a great film.
Have you read the book, Patrick?
Yes, I have.
It's one of the best books ever written.
Yes, I think so. It was one of those ones where it's about 300 or 400 pages. You sit down, you start, and you don't get up till you finish. You
cannot put it down. Yeah,
it's The other film, it's a Hollywood blockbuster, and I've got a mental blank at this time of the morning, having seen
so
it.
So do we.
But you know where William Holden opens the window and he screams, "I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore."
Peter Finch in Network.
That's it. Yeah, but wasn't there a Hollywood film about a man running a TV station? With Bill Holden, and it was
Well, William Holden was in Network.
Oh, right, okay.
And he was Max Schumacher. He was running, I think, the news division, and Faye Dunaway came in and took over, sort of.
That's right.
They wanted to go kind of down market, and Peter Finch became the mad prophet of the airwaves.
That's right.
By the way, that is Tony Delroy's favourite movie of all time.
Is it really? Well, there you go. There
and
you
he's
go.
As he's mad as hell. He's not going to take it anymore. Patrick, thanks, mate.
Thanks
Thank
a lot.
You. You know, Jeff from Les Murdy goes back to Superman, and we should... What's the first thing that we know? He's a mild-mannered reporter.
Mm.
It's one of the first things we're told about Superman.
And I think that's amazing. And it almost sets... I think I sort of mentioned before, it sort of sets the tone for almost a century of films and stories where, you know, reporters are plucky and heroic, until you get that shift somewhere in, you know, the back half of the century where you start getting a few films where maybe
can't
there's
trust
a little,
them.
Can't trust them, a little bit seedy. But like then lately
of,
it's...
Yeah. State of Play is another one. Like, you can trust Russell Crowe, can't you? But can you trust the people he's working for?
That's right. And even in Spotlight, there's a few people... that there's the suggestion that before the Spotlight team came along, there was some shoddy sweeping of things under the rug as well.
Liev Schreiber plays the crusading editor. There's often crusading editors in these movies. He had played Orson Welles in the movie about the making of Citizen
Kane.
That's
right, he had to, yeah.
And boy, he looked and sounded unbelievably like Orson Welles. Brilliant. Really
he's actually a really underrated actor, Liev Schreiber, but I think it's almost analogous that you get the plucky, the sort of hard-nosed editor is almost like the angry police captain, you know, in every cop film. You know, they're the same. They're unshakable, and they will not stop until that thing. They're going to send their people out until they get that story.
And Liev Schreiber's wife, Naomi Watts, played Valerie Plame, the New York Times...
Fair game. Fair game, that's right.
Was exposed by the New York Times, or by, you know, Scooter Libby or whatever, the guy who revealed that she was a CIA agent.
Based on her book.
Also another movie based around the same thing called Nothing But the Truth, which I highly recommend, starring Kate Beckinsale as... It's basically the same story, but they've fictionalised it. But that is a really, really good movie, maybe even better than Fair Game.
Now, possibly. Fair Game had some issues as a film. The book is that they base it on is actually fascinating.
Yeah, better than the movie.
I remember going to the screening, and they gave us a copy of the book.
Indeed.
At the screening, which was almost a fault of theirs because I had inevitably compared the two immediately.
Paul, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
You want to talk about some Hitchcock films?
Yes, there's a number of Hitchcock films where he has...
journalists?
Yeah. Journalists. There's Foreign Correspondent.
Of course, yep.
Lifeboat, where the the photojournalist is taking photos of people in the water after the ship sinks. And then there's Rear Window with James Stewart.
Oh, yeah, it's a photojournalist, of course.
It's a photojournalist.
No, Life magazine.
And there's art imitating life in Sunset Boulevard when Hedda Hopper appears at the end of the movie. Take it direct. I'm speaking from the boudoir, but, you know. And I wanted to also mention there's that's not a Hitchcock movie, and there's a George Cukor movie that was made just before or just at the time of Pearl Harbor called Keeper of the Flame, and it starred Catherine Hepburn and... Spencer Tracy.
Where did you see that film, Paul?
Where on the TV.
Oh, you didn't see it at the movies?
No. Have I got to see them at the movies?
No, you don't have to, I know you love talking, you know, like you love the theatres you saw them.
The writer of this story is actually an Australian woman, and it was a best-selling novel, and it was a parody of Lindbergh in his America First movement. It was all about anti-Semitism and the rise of fascism in America.
What's it called?
It's called Keeper of the Flame.
Okay.
And you can still buy the book. It's still, you know.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was a bestseller.
Hey, thanks, Paul.
Yeah,
as always. Speaking of anti-Semitism, Gentleman's Agreement is one of the great undercover journo movies with, again, Gregory Peck.
That's right.
Playing the journalist. And if you want to talk about the Lindberghs, well, I don't know if there's journalists in it, but Murder on the Orient Express is basically a fictionalising of the...
Yes.
Lindbergh baby deaths. Steve called to say he has seen the movie that Hamish mentioned, but does not remember the name. He said at the end the journo was led to believe it was all true, that he was on death row. Influenza says, what's the name of the film about the man filming his own death? That's actually a real life event. Mm. You don't actually see it, but Neil Davis is the name of the cameraman. He's in the Logie Hall of Fame, and Tim Bowden wrote his biography called One Crowded Hour, and look, you'll probably find it on YouTube if you really want to look at it, but he was filming a coup in Thailand and was tragically killed.
It's actually funny, I mentioned before the back half of the century, them turning against the integrity of journalism, but you know, it's a lot earlier. I mean, you know, there's movies like Sweet Smell of Success, you know, which is about, you know, you've got an underhanded publicist trying to manipulate.
But he's a gossip journalist.
He's a gossip journalist. Yeah, and I think that's where you get the kind of...
He's not a real journalist.
But I think that's where the reputation of, you know, bad journalism comes from, and that whole sort of, you know, where it leads to the modern kind of thing of, and not to to speak about any particular kind of gossip mag here, but we all know the kind of internet, the large internet kind of organizations that trade almost exclusively in gossip, and they do give them a bad name. Although I will say that one of those things did actually predict Prince's death before anybody else.
Predicted or well, reported?
Reported it, yeah. Saying well, that it was far more serious than we were led to believe.
But death they still was more have, serious.
Yeah. Yeah. No, his illness was more serious.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought than we were led to believe.
His death was fatal.
But those death can be fatal, to Ronnie said. But those websites are far more agile and able to
and
respond.
They have to be.
You know, because they don't need to get confirmation. They can just put it up.
No.
You know, whereas New York Times and things don't. Brett, good morning.
Good morning, Rod. I can't start. Don't know your guest.
Richard Gray is our guest.
Hello. G'day, Richard. How are we?
I'm well, mate. You want to mention a great Australian movie?
Yeah, mate. Not one that probably many people would know, Dating the Enemy.
Now, this stars Claudia Carvin and Guy Pearce.
Correct.
It is one of the most popular Australian movies ever made on TV. They reckon every time they roll it out, you know, they'll get huge audiences for it.
Yeah, well, it's actually a really good movie.
I think it's great, yeah.
I was in Sydney when it was released as a movie.
Yep.
And went to the shooting of the, I don't know, promotion of it.
Right, yeah.
And both Claudia and Guy were there.
Okay, yeah. And it's one of those body change, like, you know, she goes into his body, he goes into her body, and, like, they know what it's like to be each other.
Yes, exactly. And he is a TV personality. So that's where the reporting-TV theme comes into it.
He's not a reporter, though.
No, he's not a reporter. No, he's got his own show. I think he's like what Richard Wilkins does, you know.
Well, that's not a reporter. Yeah. But, Brett, that's good, mate. And, look, people should see it. Don't be put off by you thinking, oh, I've seen this sort of stuff. It's a really good movie.
Yeah. It's also a book.
A book?
Yeah, yeah.
They novelised it later. God, I love novelisations.
No, they novelised it at the same time.
Yeah, well yeah, that's right. It didn't come from a book. They wrote the book from the film.
To be honest, I don't know which way it went, whether it was a book and became a movie, all the other way around. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, Brett, thanks, mate. I could be wrong. I think it might have been.
I love a novelisation, though.
I used to collect them.
Yeah, me too.
You get angry when they change the story. Mal, I'm a little concerned about this. G'day, Mal.
Morning, Rod. Morning, Richard. Morning, Glory. Richard, the Narong. Harrison Ford and one of the usual stereo Hollywood blondes.
Was it Rachel McAdams, I think?
Mm.
Yeah, that'd be right. Centred around the usual prolific American breakfast TV shows. As I realised recently, every city's got its four versions of the damn thing.
Yes.
But it's typical of some of the TV shows, some of the morning shows you see, where there's generally a proper reporter there somewhere.
Yes.
And Harrison Ford's this crusty old reporter who's been totally obnoxious as far as the young lass is concerned. He finally cracks a story about the governor who's about to be indicted for something or other and takes a large TV crew out and springs on this governor.
The thing that, in fact, I didn't like about it now was that he just went out there by himself. And you cannot do that on commercial TV. I just found that to be one of the most unbelievable films I've ever seen, Morning Glory.
Yeah, fair. Okay, for entertainment value, that was a bit I enjoyed.
Yes, but did you ever look at that and think, oh, hang on, that would never happen?
Well, I've not been in the industry. I've been none the wiser.
That's a very good point, Mal, but thank you very much for that Morning Glory.
Someone gave me the term this week, I'd forgotten, it's called fridge logic, where you get to the end of the film and you're standing in front of your open fridge going, but how did they? They could never do that.
That's what I felt with Morning Glory. I'm glad Mal liked it, though. James, good day, James.
Yeah, good morning, Rod and Richard. Yeah, thanks to the ABC, a few months back, I was up late at night and they have their movies on.
Yep.
And this amazing, quirky, actually quite risque for the early 70s film came on, Tropic of Cancer. It's a very famous novel as well.
Mm.
And yeah, and the protagonist, the American journalist, I think it was the Chicago Tribune, the Paris office.
Rightio. This is Henry Miller's novel.
Yeah.
Yes, the very famous novel. And for the early 70s, I think that's when it was made. It was pretty R-rated.
Was it the early 70s?
Yeah, well, it was 70s, absolutely. I think it was 71.
He
ended up being one of those character actor types, not someone really famous, but I sort of remember researching a bit, but it's lost on me now. But it was set in Paris, and it was about their sort of sexual exploits. Okay. And
1970, well done.
71, yeah, 70,
Rip
there you go.
Torn and Ellen Burstyn. You might have seen it in 71. It might have taken a little while to come out to Australia. But I'm fairly sure they remade it with somebody else a few years later. Anyway, interesting. Very interesting. All right, we'll look out for that when the ABC repeats it.
Yep.
Hey, thanks very much for that, James. We've got a couple more calls we'll get to in a moment. What other films did you want to mention?
Oh, yeah, there's a couple there. Sort of spoke a little bit about some of these before, but let's have a look. One we haven't mentioned is Capote. And also the same year came out was Infamous,
mm-hmm.
and it was of course it was Infamous.
Yeah.
It was talking about Truman Capote investigating what became In Cold Blood, and I think it's sort of a different type of journalism in that sense because it's about the sort of the long form book journalism rather than being a newspaper reporter. Although he was he did do columns and things as well, but it was also his investigation. And you don't often think of it as a journalistic film. You think of it as a murder mystery, or you think of it as a biography of Truman Capote. But it is effectively a journalistic film. A
couple of ones I want to mention: Shattered Glass is a fantastically good movie about a guy who basically plagiarized at the New Republic or some magazine like that.
Is that the one with Hayden Christensen in it?
Fantastic.
Which actually showed that it wasn't his fault the Star Wars movies were terrible.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Recently, Philomena.
Of course, yeah.
The Empty Beach, the Australian film. In St. Elmo's Fire, Andrew McCarthy is a journalist. The Paper is a really good one, if ridiculous, but very, very enjoyable. Groundhog Day. In fact, there's a whole lot of films about weather people. L.A. Story, To Die For, and Groundhog Day. Reds, someone wanted to mention as well.
Reds is interesting. It's hard with a movie like Reds to kind of confine it to one genre at all. It's such a huge, sprawling film. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And, of course, there was the documentary Gonzo, the life of Hunter S. Thompson.
Brilliant documentary.
I think watch the two of them together.
Well, one after the other.
Although,
maybe not at the
same time. Although, in the spirit of Hunter S. Thompson, watch them at the same time.
Funny Face was set at the magazine.
Yeah.
Perfect, starring John Travolta, was known as the Rolling Stone movie because it came from a Rolling Stone article.
You're talking about things set in magazines, The Devil Wears Prada.
Very much so.
Sort of slight look at what goes on behind the scenes at a fashion magazine, as believable as part of that is.
Peter in Melbourne says that unknown film is from the TV series Tales of the Unexpected. So it's not a film, it was a TV show. First aired in 1977. The episode is called The Final Chapter, starring Roy Thinnes. So there you go, The Final Chapter from Tales of the Unexpected. The Shipping News is another suggestion. State of Play, War of the Worlds.
I was going to say, I'm glad that someone you mentioned TV instead of play, because Newsroom has probably done for journalism in the last couple of years what big movies like Spotlight did, but it's done it for the small screen. And you got people like Aaron Sorkin and a phenomenal cast in that show.
Unfortunately, as much as I liked it, the first scene was the best scene in the entire show, and it just went downhill.
It never gets as good as that first scene.
Yeah. John, good morning.
Good morning, mate. Has anyone mentioned Mr. Reliable?
No one until you, John.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a great sort of thing about how the media gets hold of something and twists it around to
bigger than what it really is.
Isn't that terrible that the media would do that?
Oh.
Because there were two movies about that Wally Mellish siege.
Yeah. Yeah,
out at
yeah.
the same time,
yeah.
Mr. Reliable was one, and I honestly can't remember the name of the other one. But, John, thank you. That's a good point, because another one is Ace in the Hole,
yes.
Or the Big Carnival, as it's known.
It's around 51-ish or something.
It was a Billy Wilder film, yeah. from about that time. Michael, good morning.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Good. You want to mention...
One of the best stage shows turned into a movie was Rock of Ages, where the Rolling Stone reporter... seduces Stacey Jackson and settles him down.
You've spoiled it. I was going to watch that movie today.
Oh, what a great movie.
I've never seen it or the show, but...
Oh, the stage show was good.
Yeah.
The movie wasn't as good as the stage show, I can tell you that.
No, because it had Tom Cruise in it for a start.
I prefer the stage show.
Tom Cruise is brilliant.
He's good as... he plays Stacey Jackson.
Yeah, he is just brilliant in it.
Okay, all right, Michael, I'll check that one out. I've been meaning to watch it, and one of these days I'll track it down.
The stage show is better, but the film's still kind of fun.
The Insider is another one. Very much like Truth, both based on 60 Minute stories. Truth wasn't that good, I didn't think. Heatwave, the Australian film as well.
The Pelican Brief?
Yes.
Which was about a law school and a law school student and a journo working together.
Gandhi had Martin Sheen was a journalist in that. A Face in the Crowd. Which is a brilliant movie with Patricia Neal and Andy Griffith.
Have we mentioned Frost Nixon, which came out a couple of years ago?
Very much so. Mm. Magic Town. That used to be on TV all the time, about a bloke who I think found a town that could predict how, polls and focus groups were.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that we couldn't get to any more calls. Andy wanted to mention, of course, Anchorman.
Oh, you know, about the birth of journalism, really.
Well, the second one, which is not as funny as the first, but the second one where they go to the police chase, I think is pretty insightful about how they do that.
I think so. And we've had since then on television the O.J. Simpson miniseries.
Which is great. Richard Gray, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.